Hi guys, I'm home again this week, which is really nice. I got home yesterday. So I was down in Sydney doing an event for VMware. So I did a talk on the rise of the breaches. And it was a little bit sort of Terminator Rise of the Machines kind of themed. But anyway, it was all about all the sorts of stuff that you guys know if you listen to me here around the prevalence of data breaches, how things are happening, some of the things that I have seen inside data breaches. First time I got to talk about the South Africa data as well in a conference. So I think that there was a bunch of sort of stunned and appalled responses to that based on the looks on people's faces, which is about right, given that it's a pretty major thing. But anyway, that actually leads me into the first thing that I did cover this week. And incidentally, for those of you watching, and you may be looking on the video and going, well, Troy's really kind of disheveled this week. I'm having a day off, like a proper day off. So I have been in the pool this morning. We've got family visiting from Canada, actually. So we're spending the day doing the jet ski thing and the pool thing and just all the sorts of really nice Gold Coasty stuff. So I'm not getting dressed up for anyone or doing my hair or anything fancy like that. So where were we? So getting back to the South Africa situation and the thing with them, and I think I mentioned this in my weekly update a couple of weeks ago, is that they've had basically the entire country's data leaked and exposed. And this includes things like their national IDs, which have birth dates and genders and all this sort of stuff. And then there's names and like just every conceivable attribute that you could imagine someone would have as sort of a baseline of their identity has been leaked. And I wrote something in my Security Sense column titled, "How do you do knowledge-based authentication when all knowledge is public?" And this has sort of been an increasingly prevalent problem insofar as we have more and more data breaches and more stuff is spread all over the place, the attributes that used to be things that were personal pieces of knowledge that most people did not have are now broadly accessible. And a perfect example of this is how many times do you verify who you are by using your birth date as at least one piece of identity verification data? So, you know, it might be your bank and they go, okay, well, you know, we just got to make sure that you are who you are. What's your birth date? And you sort of go, well, it's the one that I put into all those shitty V-Bulletin forums, which then got leaked all over the place because, hey, why not? They wanted to send me birthday greetings or some crazy reason like that. And now my birth date is all over the place. Or it might be, what school did you go to? Well, you know, like that was an identity verification question that got leaked in another data breach somewhere. Not to mention the whole fact that attributes such as birth date and the school you went to are the sorts of things that we now publish on social media quite liberally. I mean, maybe not all of you, because you're probably a little bit more privacy conscious. But you see this the whole time. So it raises a really interesting challenge about how we do this KBA, knowledge-based authentication. And this is something that I've been, I guess, lamenting for many years now as I've had more and more data breaches come through. And if you go into Have I Been Pwned and you do a search and you see your results come back and you look at the compromised data classes for each breach and you start to add them all up and say, what is the total sort of surface area about myself that has been exposed, you start to realize that KBA's actually got some really serious problems. So I wanted to sort of reflect on that in the wake of the South Africa thing. There's also something else that is probably coming up later this month, which I can't talk about yet, but it's kind of epically cool. Like it blew me away when it came up. I'm going to wait till that whole thing materializes. And hopefully next week, maybe the week after, I can actually talk about what it is. But you will have never seen this coming. Trust me, it'll be awesome. Now, speaking about things I don't think people saw coming. Last week, I said I'm going to have something really cool to share this week, which I have consequently shared. And it's about my involvement in Report URI. Now, I've written a whole blog post about this, which is effectively I'm joining Report URI. And look, most of the details in there, but I just want to sort of give a little bit more context. So I think that like the video and the audio is always better for transferring emotion and sentiment and everything. And the backstory here is that Report URI is a service started by a mate of mine, Scott Helm. Now, I've mentioned Scott many times before, not because he's a mate, but because he's actually done some really, really cool stuff. So I regularly reference things like his Alexa Top 1 Million... what's the right word? Top 1 million websites. He goes through and assesses these. He actually assesses them on an ongoing basis, but then every 6 months he prepares a report and he says, out of the top million, here's how many are doing HTTPS, here's how many use HSTS, here's how many use HPKP or content security policies, or all these different things. And it's really interesting as a sort of a snapshot into the way the industry is moving. So I reference his stuff a lot in blog posts and workshops, things like that. And for the last few years, Scott's also been running this project, Report URI. And the premise of Report URI has always been that if people want to create content security policies or HPKP, which by the way is dying, I don't know if you know this, I don't think I've even tweeted this, but Google's gonna kill it because it sort of protects against really niche edge cases, but it's so easy to screw up and basically on balance, it's detrimental. So anyway, HPKP is dying, but it's still there for now. Now, Report URI. So Report URI can take reports from content security policy headers where they say, hey, we're going to have a CSP. And for example, this website is allowed to load scripts from these three websites. And if anyone tries to load a script into this website from another website that's not in that whitelist, then that's a violation. And you can either block the violation outright or you can just report. So you can block it and report it, or just report it. And the reason why this makes sense is that when we think about attacks like cross-site scripting, what people are trying to do is they're trying to pull external content into your site. That's one of the things they're trying to do. So, you know, let's pull in an external JavaScript file. It's going to have an attacker's payload in it. And the CSP allows you to block that outright, and then when that violation occurs, send a report. Or, as I just mentioned, just report. So you could just say, hey, look, I don't want to block it. I just want to know when something nasty is potentially happening. So browsers for years now, even the Microsoft ones, and then it sounded a little bit disingenuous. But actually, Microsoft has done a good job with CSPs. So they do have CSPs, certainly in Edge, and they've got CSP level one in the other one, Internet Explorer as well. See, it's been that long, I'm almost forgetting now. So browsers have got really good support for CSPs, and they can report when these things happen. And there's a standard spec as to how the report must happen. It's got to be post request with a certain JSON payload. And you can go into your website and you can add a CSP and you can say, hey, look, if someone does try to put JavaScript on my page, or if they try to embed, say, rich media, or if they try to change where a form posts to another site, if they try to do any of this stuff, let me know, lodge the report. And then you can either build all your own infrastructure to receive those reports, process them, format them, show them on screens and graphs, and actually turn them into useful information. Or you can use the service that Scott built, which is Report URI. So he'd been running that for a few years, and we'd spoken many, many, many times over that period for everything from the architecture behind it. So he's actually using Azure Table Storage behind it, which I've been a massive proponent of. That's what drives Have I Been Pwned. He then uses PHP running on DigitalOcean in front of that, which is fine. You know, it's PHP apparently is okay. PHP is fine. So he uses different architecture on the front end, but the same sort of back end. So we'd had lots of architecture discussions. We had lots of discussions around things like when he got inadvertently DDoSed. Because when you add a CSP to your website, for every single violation, there's a request. So if a website goes and puts a CSP and it's a badly formatted CSP, there could be a dozen different requests that then get sent as a result of loading the site. So a dozen different violations. And then if you have a million people a day coming to your site, well, you can see the problem. So he'd had challenges like that, and we'd discuss these things, and we'd discuss sort of the positioning and the value proposition. And I actually use Report URI a lot in my workshops because I would use it to show people how to create and read their CSP. So there's a little visualization where you plug in a URL, it pulls down the CSP, and then it breaks it down into like a human readable format. I'd use that a lot. And of course, I'd sort of been saying to people, look, this is a great way of logging your reports. And he was getting a lot of traction on this. So he's getting a lot of commercial interest. He was getting a lot of people wanting to use it in much, much bigger scales. And in fact, he's been processing billions of reports, yes, with a B, every single month because it's growing so quickly. And I was with Scott in Europe in June. So I was with him in Oslo for NDC, and then we were both in the Netherlands just by coincidence doing different things. And we were drinking a bunch of beer, which is where, as you know, many good ideas come from. And he was sort of saying, look, he would really love to do the report URI thing full time. You know, he wanted to focus on that. There was so much potential in it, so many people wanting to use it, but he needed the time to be able to invest in it, to build it up so that it would be something which could then be a revenue-generating service. It was generating some revenue already. And he really wanted to be able to focus on that, had great ideas. And again, over the beers, we sort of said, okay, well, this is something that I would love to get involved in. So I have funded him to be able to actually run this thing independently without having to go out and do other work, so he can focus his entire effort on that. And that also allows us to fund a developer as well. Got a developer doing some really awesome stuff on that project, as well as obviously all the infrastructure and bits and pieces that you expect would go along with a site that needs to take billions of requests a month. So we sort of agreed on that back in June, and then over the last, where are we now, sort of, I guess, 4 and a bit months, we've been building out a version 2 to do many, many new things, as well as adding all the sort of commercial elements and things into it, and doing contracts and agreements and share allocations and all the sorts of stuff that needs to happen with what is effectively a startup. So, you know, what I was bringing to the table then was obviously the investment side of it, but also the fact that a lot of the people that I talk to in my communities, including you guys here, are the sorts of people that want to use things like Report URI. And even if you don't know you want to, trust me, you want to, because it does some really cool stuff. So, yeah, there's that side of things as well. It's having the exposure that I could bring to the project. Plus, I've got a lot of ideas. You know, like, I've got a lot of ideas of how I think we can turn this into bigger and better things. And trust me, some of these you have probably never even considered. But you start to have some really, really neat options once you have a service like that that people can use and you have a lot of people using it. And I'll talk much more about different things over the coming weeks, months, probably years. And I guess finally is that this was sort of very complementary to many of the other things I was doing. So you would have already seen me talking a lot about CSPs in blog posts. If you've been to any of my workshops or talks, you may have seen that. So it works well with that. And seeing the way people use this service will help me write other interesting blog posts and do other interesting talks. And pretty much all the things I do, particularly the Have I Been Pwned and the conference talks, even all the media stuff, all of this stuff complements each other. So by adding something like this, I think it helps me do what I do better. It gives me something else that I can also do from the comfort of my own home as well, without traveling maybe quite as much. And we hope it has a real bright future in terms of commercial upside as well. I think there's some awesome opportunities with it. So we launched all that on Wednesday, November 1. That was our go-live date for V2. A couple of little glitches. I'm not actually doing any coding on this either, by the way, because it is kind of PHP. So Scott does all the work there, along with the developer that we have working with us. So that's kind of interesting. Like, not, I mean, have I been pwned? Like, every line of code I've had to write and maintain, and it's my baby. I've not had to do this with Report URI. It's like there's somebody taking care of that. But well, I've been pretty involved in other aspects of it, obviously. So I'm really excited about this. We've tried to structure the pricing of it as well so that everybody can use it for free up until they get to the point where it starts offering some real value. So you can log 10,000 reports a month into this service. And then when you get to 10,000, it's like, okay, we're just not going to log anymore. And then the next month starts and you get another 10,000. And if you want more than 10,000, well, then you start paying some money, and it starts at like 10 bucks a month or something as well. So it's pretty cheap. So I'm really happy with that. And one of the things that I was really, really emphatic about, and Scott was as well, we're on the same page with all the big stuff here, is that we wanted to, we didn't want to do like the shitty things where it's like, sign up for free, leave your credit card, and then a month from now we'll start charging, but you can come back and cancel, you know, or give us all your personal data, like what's your company and your job title and your industry and your sector and everything, and then you can sign up. None of that crap. You go and sign up, you need an email address and a password. You got that? Good to go. And this is exactly what we've done. So we wanted to make it super accessible, and we've tried to be as absolutely transparent about everything as we can, and, you know, run this in the way that I think all of us collectively know is the right way to run a service. So that's certainly what we're doing now. That's our intention, to maintain that as well. Go and check out the blog post if you haven't seen already. Give Report URI a go. I think it's a really great idea, obviously. And it's about a lot more than just sort of blocking content as well. So I link to things like the blog post I mentioned a little while ago, the 6-step happy path to HTTPS. You know, stuff like a CSP is awesome for making sure that all of the content that gets loaded into your page is secure, even if you screw up and you make an insecure reference. And you can report when it goes wrong. So you can push this thing out and go, hey, fix all the mistakes I've made. And also let me know the ones I've made so that then I can go back and actually fix them at the source as well. So that's report URI. So I'll come back to that many, many other times in terms of talking about general tech, how do we do CSPs and upgrading insecure requests, etc. And then I'll let you know how it's going as a project as well. But so thank you also for everyone that's given me a lot of support and congrats over the last couple of days as well. That's awesome. And also thanks to the people that are driving the traffic, because we're doing up to about 200,000 requests a minute at the moment, which is kind of cool given that we haven't really started to push it at all. So yeah, that's report URI. Let's do something different. Let's do something, I was going to say fun, but this is the face palm of all face palms, and it is pseudo password fields. Now, this was one of those situations where someone's pinged me and they've sent me an email and said, hey, look, I've seen a thing, you know, like a thing that looks really bad. I think you'd be interested in it. And they've pointed me to a website, which is a website that's a shopping site, and you can sign in. So, you know, there's an email address field and a password field. And what you do is you enter your email address and your password and you log in. But it was kind of curious because the whole page was HTTP, but there was no warning in Firefox, which is what he originally reported, or Chrome. So you know how you're meant to have the warning when there's a login form served insecurely? Both those browsers are like, maybe you shouldn't be doing this because it doesn't look very secure. But there was no warning. And I'm looking at this going, that is really interesting. I wonder what's gone wrong. And what these guys had done, and this is, let me actually check the name because it's the sort of thing where I don't want to get the name wrong and throw someone else under the bus, so to speak. It was Shop City, wasn't it? So here we go. So Shop Cambridge. And as I understand it, this is located to a shopping centre in Canada somewhere. And as we subsequently learned, this is actually part of an offering from a company called ShopCity.com. And they've done the same thing on other sites as well. Unfortunately, Cambridge is the one that sort of got the lion's share of attention because that was the one that was reported to me. But anyway, so what ShopCity.com has done is they've said browser warnings could cause people concern, you know, because there's no HTTPS. So what we'll do is we'll get rid of the browser warnings. And just a little part of me that thinks this is quite an enterprising approach, because what they did is they said it's the password field which causes the warning to happen. So rather than like actually fix the root cause of the warning, which is put HTTPS on your site, they changed the password field to just a text field. So rather than it being a type of password, it's just a type of text. But then, of course, you'd be wondering, well, what do we do now? Because when you type the password, you'll actually see it. So they then apply CSS that uses a font that turns every character into one of those little round disks. So you type the password and it's just like disk, 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 disk. And it's a pseudo password field. It's not a real password field, but it behaves like a real password field. And it's designed entirely to deceive the browser and to then consequently deceive the user into entering a piece of sensitive information into a non-secure page, which the browser should warn you about, but it doesn't because of this shitty, shitty trick. And I shared a tweet of this the other day. I'm just looking at it now. It's got a few hundred retweets and about 600 favorites. So yeah, people thought this was interesting. Incidentally, a few people actually replied, and it's like typical shitty Microsoft trying to do insecure things, because I think they totally missed all of the sarcasm, which was in my initial tweet. And B, of course, I don't work for Microsoft, but hey, when people are upset, they love to say I work for Microsoft. So anyway, I wrote this piece up and explained how it works. And it is just unfathomably stupid that they would think to do this. And as many people have consequently said, they've said, look, it would actually be easy just to add HTTPS to the site than to go through all this rigmarole of trying to trick the browser into doing something that it's not actually meant to do, i.e. not show a warning when it's meant to show a warning. So that I'm out of words. It is face-palmingly special. We'll see what happens now. I'm kind of curious. Often I'll write something like this and, you know, no one sort of cared until the time where it actually gets written about. And then they start getting negative press. And then, you know, suddenly, magically, they sort of start to care. Curiously, the guy that sent it to me had been in touch with Shop Cambridge. And his quote here, and I did actually get his permission to reproduce this. He says, "I've been speaking with the owner about SSL before I invest in becoming a member, assumably a member of Shop Cambridge. But she's been told by the dev of the platform, it's a franchise system called ShopCity.com, that SSL is more about Google's monopolizing visibility of content and less to do with security. So even though Firefox, which as you know is built by Mozilla, is showing great big warnings, apparently this is Google monopolizing the industry and trying to hold people to ransom and force them to get HTTPS because reasons." Yep. Yeah. So it will be interesting to see how long, A, that site remains HTTP, and B, how long that deceitful practice remains. I am hoping for not very long on both those fronts. But who knows? We'll see. So that was that one. That's a bit of fun. I think that's got some more legs in it yet. So we'll see what other feedback comes from that. Last thing is, I have got ZeroFox sponsoring my blog this week. So ZeroFox is a new sponsor. It's the first time they've appeared on there. And I'm grateful for those guys coming along and supporting what I do. It has been a very good week to be there on the sponsor bar. I have had some pretty crazy traffic over the course of this week due to the report URI piece and then, of course, the pseudo password thing. And incidentally, speaking of traffic, I've noticed, have I been pwned, at the moment is constantly running at about 120,000, 130,000 unique visitors a day. So for reasons that I can't explain other than just organic growth, it's kind of doubled the traffic over the last few weeks, which is, again, continues to amaze me. And incidentally, while I mention that, I'm still doing all of that stuff, as well as Report Your RI. So Report Your RI is going to be a relatively small slice of my time, and I'll still be putting a huge amount of focus on the Have I Been Pwned. In fact, I've got a lot of data I've got to load today. We're going to pass 4.8 billion records today with an incident that will be... I'm just curious to see how people respond. We'll leave it at that. I might talk more about it next week. So that's it for now. I'm going to try and put this thing in the can, start it uploading over my terrible internet connection, and go back to the pool. Thanks for watching, guys.